Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he vanished before their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread."
Our hope is that this three-week worship series, The Art and Resurrection of Justice, will provide a framework for us to think together about how God's justice is being raised in the world today, all around us. Each week, we're looking together at a different topic and holding that in conversation with the justice issue of our day. So last week, we gathered around Thomas's experience with the other disciples of Jesus' resurrection and the brutalities of human trafficking. And this morning, we gather around food insecurity and this story of the encounter of the risen one at Emmaus, on the road to Emmaus. And then next Sunday, we're going to listen together to the voices of the voiceless, the so-called voiceless, as we listen for how God is being born again. And we trust that this is a challenging series for many of us in this space, to look together at what it means to be complicit in some of these injustices that shape our lives and our world. And we also know that the followers of Jesus in those early days were sent out to look for and to tell about hope amidst real suffering and hurt. And so we're not going to look away from it in our day, just as they weren't afraid to look away in their day. But we might feel afraid at moments. We might feel overwhelmed at moments. And when we look back at Scripture, we recognize that we're not alone in that. So this morning, we turn to food insecurity. 50 million people in the United States, that's one in four children, don't know where their next meal is coming from. One in four children. When I heard that, as Linda and I were down in Los Angeles, we were together at a conference called Justice, and we were there at a film festival, and this was like the fourth film in that we saw, called A Place at the Table. And that's how it opens, with one in four children do not know where their next meal is going to come from. That reality just brought me to a halt. My partner Sarah is down in San Antonio, and I was having a meal last night with Eleanor, talking about what we're thankful for. And then we went to bed, and all I could think about at that meal, and then when we're together trying to put her to sleep, one in four children in our country don't know where their next meal is going to come from. A Place at the Table examines issues of hunger. It holds them up in ways that bring us to a halt. They do so by sharing the stories of three families and their experiences with hunger. Before we look at one of those families, I want to share some definitions with us. And the first is this word that might be new to some of us, food insecurity. Food insecurity is the consistent access to adequate food is limited by a lack of money and other resources at times during the year. Food deserts relate to this. Food deserts are often urban neighborhoods or rural towns without ready access to fresh, healthy, and affordable food. So a food desert might be a place that you can't easily get to a grocery store or to a co-op or to a farmer's market. The closest places for you to get food tend to be convenience stores or fast food chains. And so while you might have access to some food, it's not healthy, nor is it nutritious. And more people than I can fathom live in food deserts in our country this day. Definitions help me to frame some of these things and to understand them, but when you see and hear a real person's story and experience of this, that to me is where my faith in a God who becomes incarnate, flesh and blood, becomes real. And so I want to invite us to see and hear Rosie's story. So let's watch.
Coleman, Colorado is really cool, and it's mostly where all the cowboys and cowgirls roam. We're just country people. Sometimes we run out of food, so we try to figure out something. Probably ask friends for food. We get really hungry, and our tummies just growl, and sometimes I feel like I'm gonna barf because it feels bad. But I don't really know what to do.
Hunger definitely impacts my classroom. I have had students come to me upset, and it's definitely a huge issue in our small community.
We are going to spend a little bit of time talking about how to use context clues to help us when we find words in the textbooks that we're reading.
One student in particular, Rosie, I just really felt she wasn't really applying herself in the classroom, and I couldn't figure out where that attitude was coming from. I felt that she just really didn't care about what I wanted her to learn or that school was that important. And what I realized when I brought her in one day was the main issue was that she was hungry.
I struggle a lot. And most of the time, it's because my stomach is really hurting, and I look at her and all I think about is food. So I have these little visions in my eyes. Sometimes when I look at her, I vision her as a banana, so she goes like a banana. And then everybody in the class is like apples or oranges. And then I'm like, oh, great.
I deliver food bags every week from the food bank at our local church.
Okay.
I was one of those kids that was hungry.
All right, and do I need to pay
growing up, it was difficult. It was embarrassing.
My dream is, have you heard of the Extreme Makeover Home Edition? I just wish they would come and actually rescue us from our house. But we don't have a story like they do.
We are tying the arms behind the backs of children as they go into public schools. We're making it so that we spend money for teachers and then we get delivered to them a lot of children who can't learn.
The lost potential. Some of those kids could potentially be a great scientist or go on to be leaders in our armed forces. But the impact that hunger has messes everything up. And as a result of that, we're weakening our nation.
Rosie's teacher thought school wasn't important to this young girl. And she started to take time to listen to her story. I imagine it kind of like those two folks walking with Jesus and trying to listen to each other about what had happened. And she started to break open Rosie's story. And she heard in the depths of that this little girl was hungry. 1 in 4 children in our country are like Rosie. They're hungry. So how are we as followers of Jesus to respond to that reality on this side of Easter? I want to invite us to look this morning at this story of the road to Emmaus, not because it answers all of these questions for us, but because I believe that it can point us to some ways of being as followers of Jesus that can help us to reach in love, that can sustain us while we do that, and can call us more and more deeply into God's resurrection and hope in the midst of all of this hurting. So Luke's gospel describes it this way. The two walking on the road to Emmaus, they urged the one, they didn't know who this person was. They thought he was a stranger. It was the risen Christ. They urged him strongly after they'd been walking these 7 miles, stay with us because it's almost evening and the day now is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened and they recognized him. That's where Jesus meets us over and over, is in the breaking of the bread. One theologian that I was reading this week describes it this way. The hospitality of the traveling companions becomes the doorway of grace. Their hospitality of inviting this one that they'd been walking with inside, it allows them to see the risen one, who'd been completely unaware to them. They'd been walking and talking and hearing this person tell the stories, but it wasn't until that moment, and it was a fleeting moment. It's not a coincidence that most of the resurrection stories we experience in our biblical witness have to do with food, and it's fleeting. I don't know what your experience of resurrection is like, but we sang Happy here on Easter morning, and then we went out from that place, and it stays with you, and it comes back every once in a while. My daughter will bust out telling me that she's a room without a roof, and she'll start to clap. And then if I clap along, she gets upset with me. But that's how resurrection happens. There's this beautiful moment, and then it passes us by. And then we're called on to pay attention for how that next one is, because those two people were walking that whole 7 mile trip, hearing these stories, completely unaware of who it was that they were listening to. But their hospitality to this traveling companion allowed them to experience grace. It was a doorway. That's what happens as we share meals. We transgress these boundaries and we start to see each other anew. These boundaries fade away and we have communion with the person across from us, with the people around us, with God who holds all of us. It's at the table as we break bread that our eyes are opened to the possibilities of resurrection. And so we, as followers of Jesus on this side of Easter, we're called to the table, to this table, which shapes us in a way of life. We say all means all as you come in. And we mean that as we come to the communion table, that this table is open for anyone who seeks to follow in the way of Jesus, not knowing how it's going to happen, but trusting that as we live into this, we will figure it out together and that God's unconditional love will simply hold us We come together around this table because we believe that we need it if we're going to live this out in the world around us. See, we encounter this table at our kitchen tables every time we leave here, or at the park when we go down to picnic right after this, or in the conversation that we're going to have about future generations. Folks like Rosie, how are we going to ensure that this table, which I do want to say Mark took out of this room and he sanded it down and stained it to bring it back to life, it's a resurrection moment in this space, how are we going to ensure that that table is here for generations to come so that they too experience a God that says all means all and then go out into the world to live that out? Those are the ways that we're called to be together as followers of Jesus, to try to figure that out, to try to hold one another as we stumble and as we mess it up, because that's what happens in our lives. That's what's happened as we as a community have allowed a system to take place that little girls like Rosie look at their teacher and see a banana. We have messed up. Messed up beyond any comprehensible way of understanding how God longs us to be. And so we have to trust in some way, or we're invited to trust, that this table can take us out into the world to feed those hungry folks. We talk about it this way when we gather at Blueprint for Discipleship. We gather for 6 weeks on Sunday evenings, and each time we come together, we share something that we're thankful for from that day, from that week. We bless that, we give thanks for it, and then we share a meal together. It's the same rhythm that Jesus uses with those disciples in all of these different encounters. And the prayer that we close with is this: loving God, to those who hunger, give bread. And to those with bread, give hunger for justice. We come back to that over and over. Eleanor and I shared it last night. We shared it this morning with Sarah on FaceTime from San Antonio. That prayer takes shape three different times in the Gospel of Luke. The first one is the feeding of the 5,000 in chapter 9. And then we experience it again at the Last Supper in chapter 22. And then this morning story on the road to Emmaus. Each time Jesus takes the bread and blesses it or gives thanks for it and then breaks it and then distributes it. In the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus sends the disciples to distribute it. But there is something, if we hold the truth and the depth and the hope of these stories, that we can't but go from this table out to the world to recognize that they're connected. We'll see this later today on a picnic table or on a picnic blanket. This table is with us always. This table is inviting us and calling us to see that our spiritual hunger and our physical hunger are woven together in God's grace and in God's love, calling us to be a spirit of resurrection and hope in a world that is broken apart. Molly Marshall is a theologian, and she describes it this way: we move in this story from isolation to community. From isolation to community. And it shouldn't be a surprise, she says, that this story moves us from isolation to community. Christ joins himself to those on the way, those two folks walking, who then make space for him in the village. God always creates space for the other in order for community to take shape. And after Jesus is no longer in view, the disciples, they begin to break open their own lives in transparent ways. They say, were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening scripture to us? And so this is our invitation this morning, is to see how this story moves us from isolation to community, to hold that in conversation with this invitation to look around at the community around us in our own community right here, around us in Sacramento, far away from us in rural areas, down the street in Oak Park. How are we going to look with eyes to see and move from isolation to community? Let's watch one more time a short little clip from A Place at the Table.
It's a problem that people are ashamed of acknowledging.
It's very humiliating.
It's tiring.
what are we going to do?
This generation will live sicker and die younger than the parents' generation.
Hunger is right here in the United States.
And the problem is getting worse.
The reason people are going hungry is not because of a shortage of food, it's because of poverty.
One out of every two kids in the United States at some point will be on food assistance.
I was one of those kids that was hungry. It messes with you.
The average food stamp benefit is $3 a day. There are people who are living on that, and you really can't.
If you have a limited amount of money, you're going to spend it on the cheapest calories you can get, and that's processed foods.
My dream is to go to college, but I can't tell my kids, I'll make sure you guys eat in 2 years. I'm struggling to even feed my kids every day.
Put that in there.
Okay, that was a bad idea.
As many as 50 million Americans rely on charitable food programs.
I haven't received a pay raise in 4 years, and what I used to spend on a month in groceries now gets me about 2 weeks.
It's amazing how the need has increased.
Charity is a great thing, but it's not the way to end hunger. We're weakening our nation.
I don't really know what to do.
Was a documentary in 1968 that put hunger on the national agenda.
Regular Americans rose up and demanded a modern nutrition assistance safety net, which helped us almost end hunger entirely by the late 1970s.
It showed that public policy could work, political will could work to make a difference in our country.
There's probably 600, 700 chefs here, all really committed to helping this problem that we have with childhood obesity and hunger.
We're working to make sure that families have access to quality, affordable food.
It's so good.
There's a lot of education that needs to happen around what is healthy food.
Give your ideas for change, for the healthy life of your kids.
We all have a stake in this.
About patriotism, really. If another country was doing this to our kids, we would be at war. And it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be that way. And for Jeff Bridges, it's about patriotism. But for me, it's about following Jesus. It doesn't have to be that way because he came to us in the expression of a meal and said, now go out and feed my people. Whenever you encounter those that are hungry, you encounter me. So we're going to have to look around at those who are hungry in our community, in our families, in our neighborhoods, and discern ways that we might respond, that we might go and tell folks about the hope that we've experienced here at this table that shapes us in a way of life that allows us to see the table over and over every day as we move. See, the bread is broken here. In just a moment, we'll gather around this table and we'll break bread and we'll say, all means all, come to the table and be fed spiritually and physically. And then we'll be called to go out into the world and to be those folks who do just that. And then allow God's Spirit to come to us, to rise up when we least expect it. After a 7 hour or 7 mile walk, while we're trying to talk with people, to finally see for just a moment that God's been with us there all along. Because just like that bread is going to be broken, our food systems are broken. And God's love and resurrection comes to us in the midst of that brokenness. And yet it can feel overwhelming to think about how we respond to hunger and food insecurity. It's hard to know where to start. And so I want to invite us to start with our own tables first. I talked with Antonio, who's a friend and a farmer and part of our community here. He works at Soilborne Farms. Antonio shared a couple of steps that I want to invite us to think about. We all come from different places in this room. And so your next step is going to be different than the person's next to you. And what it looks like for you to experience resurrection, to break bread with folks, may be different than that person. But each of us need to take a next step around this. And so here's a few. Cook real food made from quality ingredients. My daughter is 4. It is tiring. Cooking real food means I have to give up a couple of other things because it takes more time. So how is my next step going to mean that I'm going to have to structure my day a little bit differently than I have? So cook that real food that's made from quality ingredients from local farms. And cook food from local farms that, if it has a label, make sure that the label means something. We have this label now that you see all over the place that's called natural. which means anything but natural is inside of it. So if it says fair trade, or if it says food justice, that's going to take us a lot further along the way toward the art and resurrection of justice than natural is ever going to, at least now, the way we do our labeling. Eat protein, for those of us that do eat meat, eat protein that's raised humanely, fed biologically appropriate diets, and sustainably wild-caught. Be willing to pay the real cost of production that includes a livelihood for the producers. And Antonio, as a farmer, says this applies to everything, not just food. But be willing to pay what it costs for people to have livelihoods that are sustainable. Get involved. One place that he suggests is Harvest Sacramento. It's doing work here in Sacramento to help connect people to the land. We're in one of the places in the world that grows more food than anywhere else. How are we going to connect to that? Many of us are phenomenal gardeners, and it might be teaching some of the people around us, like me, how to not kill all the things in my garden. We all have a different next step to take. And my wondering is, what is yours and what is mine? See, like the movement from isolation to community that those folks experienced on the road to Emmaus, that's what these steps take us toward, from isolation to community. The farmer and poet Wendell Berry, he writes about it like this: a significant part of the pleasure of eating is in one's accurate consciousness of the lives and the world from which food comes. The more we get involved in knowing about the food that we eat and that we prepare and the lives that have brought it to us and the land that has allowed us to have it, the more we are aware of that, it seems to me the more we're open to experiencing Christ as we share it with others. And so I want to tell us about some ways that folks in our community are witnessing to the art and the resurrection of justice through breaking bread. One of those is a grant that Kay Nelson and a couple other physicians who are down in San Antonio right now wrote through the University of California, Davis. And the grant allows them now, when patients come in who are hungry, they can write prescriptions for $20 so those folks can go to the farmer's market and get $20 worth of food. So those are a couple people in our community that wondered with the people around them that every time people come in and they have these lists of things that they're struggling with, the one we never really talk about is hunger. So we're going to take away that from the very beginning, and we're going to give out prescriptions, $20 to the farmer's market. We talked with Antonio about that, and so we have, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 $5 gift cards right here from Soilborne Farms. And so I'm going to put these, some of them here, and we'll put some in the back. And as we come forward for an offering, I'd invite you to take one. Pass it along to somebody who you know might benefit from this. Maybe you would. Maybe you've never been out to Soilborne Farms farm stand. Take a bike out to the American River, bike down, pay $5, take your basket. It's actually, you get stuck. You don't want to do that. And come back. We want to offer these. I'm going to put them all right here to make it easy, that people can come forward to take those as an offering from us to you, or for you to give along as well to someone else. We do this in simple ways. On Maundy Thursday, five people from our community went to their homes and they spent time making soup for us. And then we took greens from the farm and we broke bread together. It might seem simple, but when we make those choices to break bread together in those kinds of ways, the risen Christ comes up among us, is born, is risen again. We did it as well at Winter Sanctuary. Many of you know we had about 100, 120 homeless folks that were here over two different periods the last few months. The most recent one, we had Marjorie and Kevin Wolfork and Andrea that led all of us in offering radical hospitality to folks that were here. Kevin Luttrell and others helped us to share these meals. And one of the things we've recognized in the past is as folks come in who are living on the streets, the meals that they're used to getting are like they're from a food desert. When you go to a food pantry, more often than not, the calories that we're getting there are empty calories. And so we often feel good about ourselves that we're giving these things away, but we're feeding unnutritious habits and actually maybe doing just as much harm as we are good in that moment. That's why we gather in kitchen tables to talk about doing harm and doing good, to sustain that, to try to figure those things out. And so Emma, who's a student at Sacramento State, looked at our menus and tried to help us make them more nutritious. And then we talked to farmers and said, what do you guys have that we could cook seasonally? And it wasn't perfect, but we were trying as a community to break bread in a way that was addressing food insecurity and also reaching in love. It's that kind of radical hospitality that can become a gateway to grace, just like that road to Emmaus. Dorothy Soleil tells this story that I want to close with. It's in a book called The Strength of the Weak, Toward a Christian Feminist Identity. She says, Rabbi Mendel wanted to know what heaven and hell looked like, and the prophet Elijah took him to show him. Elijah led him into a large room where a big fire was burning and where there was a large table with a huge pot of spoons that were longer than their arms. And because the people could not eat with these spoons, they sat around the table and they starved. You have that image? Rabbi Mendel found this room, and what he saw there is so terrible that he quickly ran outside. He couldn't handle that the people were starving in that space because the spoons were too big for them to use. And so Elijah took Rabbi Mendel to heaven. It was this other large room. Big fire was burning. There was a large table, and there was a big pot of steaming soup on it. And around the table sat people with those exact same spoons. But they didn't have to starve because they were feeding each other. That's what the difference looks like, feeding one another. So as we prepare to come to this table, may we reflect on how God is calling us to feed one another this day. Around this table, may we experience an invitation that all may come to this space and be fed spiritually and physically, and then may we enact that in our daily lives, each and every moment. Loving God, to those who hunger, like Rosie, may you give bread. And to those with bread, may you give hunger for justice. Guide our lives that we might learn to feed one another.